What's up, internet? You're listening to the Making Geeks Podcast, a podcast for makers, dads, and geeks. And this is episode 198.
Wow. Two more.
And speaking of two more, episode 200 is kind of a big deal around here. We have 4 years of podcasts, kind of culminating in that big number of, 200. And we're planning a pretty big event that we would like all of you to be a part of on October 25th.
8 p.m. Eastern.
8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time. And I don't know what Oklahoma goes by. I don't know.
7 p.m.
Okay.
I didn't think about it for a second. 7 p.m.
Oklahoma has their own time. Okay.
Oklahoma Standard Time. It'll be on our YouTube channel. So if you're not a subscriber for that channel, then you're missing out because you don't know where it is. But just search for it. We'll have links up on all our social medias individually and the collective podcast social as a whole.
Should be a good time. We're planning on having some special guests. We have some prizes to give away, so make sure that you don't miss out on it.
Yep. It's not the event we were hoping for at the beginning of this year. But as this year has taught us, don't hope for anything anymore.
It's depressing, but okay. Yes.
That's what I've learned.
Yep. Yeah. We're still excited that we're going to be able to do this and celebrate with all of us and all of you, and we're looking forward to it. So make sure you don't miss out.
On with the show.
On with the show. So how are you guys doing this week?
Doing good. Just, I don't
know.
You put
out a video.
I did put out a video.
You need to plug it.
I did. I put out a video on how to put a Raspberry Pi and a screen inside the original Lego NES set. This is sort of a spin-off video of stuff I'd been teasing for a while. When I first got the NES set, within an hour of me finishing it, there were people on the live stream that were like, "What? When are you going to put a Raspberry Pi in there?" And that seemed so simple that I didn't really want to do it because I already kind of delved into the emulation kind of side already with several of my other projects. But I figured it was a great primer for people that have never even done anything right with Raspberry Pi. So I decided to do a little bit more of a tutorial side, a little more deeper dive, on like the details and like how to load the software. And it's cool because there's lots of different ways to go about the same thing with the Raspberry Pi. Like even in this project, like you could put the different parts in different parts of the build of the set. Like you could put the Pi inside the actual console in the screen inside the actual TV set. And there's like lots of room for creativity and adding things on your own. And also there's so many different ways to even load software on a Raspberry Pi and load the games on. I wanted something as simple and as clear cut as possible. So I showed, I think, all the steps. I don't think I left anything out. How to load the operating system, how to transfer games over. And it seems to be doing all right. I was pretty pleased with how it came out. It was a relatively quick turnaround, I thought, from my other video. So hopefully I can keep that up within the next couple months. And another interesting thing of note, it's my first like officially like sponsored video. Like I actually did the product placement check on YouTube, which I never had done before. So I thought that was kind of exciting. Hopefully it wasn't too painful. I'm going to try to get better at them. But
did you have to send it in to the company to get approval prior to uploading it and all that kind of stuff?
I did out of courtesy. They seem to not really
care.
Yeah, it's been a little bit hard to communicate because it is a Chinese-based company. And the person I'm talking with, they're pretty well versed in English, but there are some things I think that are still lost in translation.
Well, because like they're versed in English, not American, because there's a difference.
But just like procedural things, I think some stuff would be a little more official than it was. I don't know. They sent a contract that was a little bit strange. It was just, you might as well just wrote it out on a napkin. I mean, like that's the quality of like, there's like literally no fine print to get like snagged up in. So it seemed like fake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even how our contract should be written, just like really, really plain.
Yes.
You do this, you get money.
Yes. So I'm still working out some of the details on that, but I'm excited to see where that goes. And please leave me some feedback on how you thought it went. If I should do a little bit differently or ideas, that would be great. But yeah, that's what I've been up to. How about you guys?
I've been editing.
Go ahead.
That's my life now. That's all I do is I edit. It's been really fun. It's been terrible and frustrating and fun and terrible all at the same time. But that's what I've been doing anytime I have a spare moment is editing that video. And I've got it down to about 16 minutes. I think I've re-edited part one 9 times, I think. Trying to get the pacing. And I've gone through like 17 songs just for the first part. There's 9 parts in this video. And just for the first part, I've redid it like 9 times, gone through 17 songs. Because I'm like, if I can't nail down the first 3 minutes of this video, people aren't going to watch the other 15. And it's not going to make a difference if they're great or not, if they can't get past this first part. So I have been honing and honing and honing and sending links and getting feedback. And it's I like where it's at now. It could probably be just a little better, but I'm focusing on the rest of the video now. And I am going to upload it regardless of where it's at, because when it comes to videos, there's no such thing as done. There's just uploaded. And so regardless of where I'm at, I am uploading the video Sunday morning along with the plans, regardless of where they're at, which is slightly terrifying than the video right now because of how little I've done on the plans. But regardless, Sunday morning, all of this past 5 months craziness is going to head out into the world, and I'll see how my baby does.
So I will say that I was one of the privileged few that got to see an early cut of the video.
Yep.
And I think now I understand a little bit better of the monumental undertaking that you were trying to accomplish with this video. I'm hoping that some of my notes helped a little bit. Yeah. I think 16 minutes is a reasonable amount of time for you're trying to stuff in that video. And I better understand the difficulty of really trying to be able to string that person along to get through, you know, everything you're trying to show. So hats off to you. Good luck. Safe travels. this week has been kind of like all over the place for me. I haven't really gotten into any traditional making. I've done some things on the laser, but really not a whole lot to kind of show off. I've been putting a lot of my time into Inktober, which is kind of this nationwide event for drawing and just trying to be creative on a daily basis. I've been enjoying that. I did that for the first time last year. Loved it so much. I wanted to do it again this year. And I'm also doing it with my students. We're sharing drawings back and forth and ideas. And it's kind of opening up a lot of creativity that's helping me in a lot of different ways. It's a really good practice in creativity and abstract thinking, trying to think differently. And I also streamed on Twitch this week. Yeah. Which is really interesting, but I didn't stream anything making related. I streamed an esports match for the esports team that I run at my school, which was weird to stream that on the Geek Builders channel, but I did. And the next day, I created a special one just for the school. So that was kind of weird, but I liked it, and I haven't streamed in a long time. And I think streaming itself is almost like a skill you have to kind of keep up with, because if you don't, it's really easy for things to get away from you. And I was trying to manage a chat of high school kids at the same time, which has its own level of challenge. But yes. The interesting thing is, this is the first time I've streamed something where I wasn't the subject of the stream. I basically set it up so the game was showing. There's some software built in the game for a game called League of Legends. The camera will auto move and does pretty good job in showing the match, which left me as really kind of a broadcast producer of really managing the screens and everything else. And that was kind of fun. I liked it. I didn't do any announcing. I didn't feel confident enough to do that, mainly because I don't.
Didn't add your own banter and commentary.
I think I really wanted to, because I think it's fun. But I don't know enough about this game. I know how to play the game, but I don't know all the ins and outs. And I, I don't know. I'll wait before I attempt anything like that.
Just get like a soundboard of all the stingers and stuff from like Unreal Tournament, where it's like triple kill, multi kill.
Well, it's pretty accurate for what happens in the game. Maybe I will. Just, you know, single
button monster.
Yeah, exactly. Dominating. Those are awesome.
Yeah,
this is a total side note, but have you guys played Among Us? Because if you haven't, I think it would be fun to play together and stream and record. And it could be, doesn't have to be a podcast, but I think it would be fun to play that with you guys to see how you like it.
I don't even know what that is.
That could possibly be something that we've been talking about for later plans. We'll talk about at a later time.
Yeah. So just putting that out there in the world.
Yeah. There's a couple games that have kind of gained a lot of popularity. Among Us and Fall Guys, I think they're two that people are talking about the most right now. And I haven't played either one. So, you know, video games are pretty geeky, and we're into a lot of geeky stuff, which is going to be a very poor attempt to turn a bridge into our topic for tonight. And that is, what draws us to the geek? You know, why are geeky things so attractive to us? I never really put a lot of thought into it. I had an interaction with a coworker, I think it was like a year or two ago, and I hadn't had this happen before. Guy about my age, also a teacher, and somehow we were on the topic of things we watch and pay attention to, and he said specifically he doesn't watch anything fantasy. He doesn't understand it, doesn't like it. There's like no appreciation for it. He only watches documentary, World War II stuff, military stuff, very much that type of personality. Nothing wrong with that, by the way, just saying that, you know, kind of very much a contrast to, you know, what we usually talk about on the show. And I'm going, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, I wonder what that's like. I wonder what the adverse reaction is to things that are fantasy-based, you know, why that turns people off, because I don't relate to that. I'm just wondering. But on the flip side, it actually, you know, sets up a good question of why are we attracted, you know, to those things? And if we've even, you know, stopped to think about why we like the things that we like.
I was a little scrawny kid growing up. And so I was never built for, like, competitive sports. So I was never with the in crowd, regardless of my age, whether I was 6 or 16 or whatever, like I was never with that crowd. And I was an only child, not an only child. I have a little brother, but there's 7 years between us. And so I was kind of an only child for a while. And I grew up in a tiny town with only 2,000 people in the entire town. And so there wasn't a lot of people to do stuff with, especially that were my age. And so Saturday morning cartoons, honestly, is probably where it started. Because that introduced me to cartoons and superheroes and animation and all that kind of stuff that sparked a passion for literally the rest of my life. All based on, you know, what I was watching every Saturday morning. The only time I would really get to watch TV, because the only thing was on after school was news, because we didn't have cable. We had public, you know, public channels, 7, 9/11. And if the president was on, he was on every channel, that joke. And so a lot of it was spun off of, like, the community that I was raised in and not having access to, like, pop culture and only getting it through Saturday morning cartoons. And just liking that stuff, that world so much, led me into things like comic books and action figures and books and the world and the realm of geek that we now. So that was how I got into it.
Yeah, it sounds kind of similar to me as well. I was a very scrawny kid. Grew up in Richmond, Virginia, which is not a small town by any means. But also, I was the only kid, only child growing up. I had half sisters and brothers, but I never lived with them. Lived with my grandparents for most of my childhood. So I think a lot of the tropes and the things that interest me about things that are often geek related, there a lot of times there's like an oddball kind of angle, or there's like a like an outcast kind of feel to it, which makes, or an underdog kind of feel, which I kind of gravitate towards. So if, even today, if there's something where there's a story about like a bunch of misfits, you know, that's like the common thing, like Firefly or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, or you know, any number of things where they like their strength is because of the diversity and their oddities and their weirdness, right? So I kind of gravitated toward those. And like you said, with the Saturday morning cartoons, same as well, plus the Disney afternoon shows. So anytime those came on, like Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers or DuckTales, Gummy Bears, those are like what I ate after getting out of school, you know, in terms of television consumption.
Wonderful World of Disney on Sunday nights.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, so good.
Ninja Turtles. I mean, all the good stuff, right? He-Man, Transformers.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of those shows, like, influenced how, like, my personality as well. Like, I always gravitated towards Raphael, like, the snarky, smart-ass kind of character. Obviously, that's sort of, like, my bread and butter with a lot of stuff. So, like, just in his comic timing and, like, how he, like, spun jokes off and everything, that's kind of, I can relate to that still and, like, kind of relate and, like, draw a, not a heritage, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of like a,
Parallel,
I guess, or like a, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, it escapes me at the moment, but kind of like a drawing like a line back through, to those moments, you know, like kind of set the stage and like plant the seeds, like Simpsons coming out, that was brand new at the time, that my grandmother hated, you know, didn't want me to watch it, that made me want to watch it even more. Like even if I was watching something on Saturday morning and she heard, it's funny how the standards change, but if she just heard one character calling another character a fool, that was enough for her to turn it off so I couldn't watch it. Like that level of strictness, I guess. But it wasn't so crushing that I couldn't watch anything, but that's kind of, it's funny how standards of cartoons like evolve. Like Simpsons was really bad, and then it was like Beavis and Butthead was really bad, and then it's like South Park, and it just kept, they kept upping the ante every generation, right? But
for me it was Ninja Turtles is the thing I couldn't have. I remember I had I had Ninja Turtle cards, like the baseball cards, that I would have to hide from my parents. Because they hated Ninja Turtles so much that, like, the second they found them, they took them away. Yeah. Because it was Ninja Turtles. They were baseball cards.
Sure.
But I eventually got the action figures and everything like that. Yeah, you were talking, you know, it's funny. I mean, that
Garbage Pail, like, Ninja Kids Turtles cards, was like, those things were, like, kid gold. I mean, you just, like, smuggle them into a, you know, into school, and it's kind of like, kind of trade them in the back of the classroom, like, hey, you have the atom bomb? Yeah, okay. I got one of those. Yeah. I need to complete that set. Or like the Desert Storm trading cards. Like I got a Schwarzkopf. Oh my God. Like what a weird time. Can you imagine if there were like current political playing cards now? Like it's just strange.
Yeah.
Like every pack had like a piece of a giant map or a puzzle or something. They're like, oh, I got that one. Like there are so many moments in Garden State that I remember because they referenced that card game and other things that from my childhood that I hadn't heard a lot of people talk about, like the stupid little hamster tubes. Like I had lots of friends with those, with the hamsters, like, you know, had like a little playground
tubes everywhere.
Yeah, it was like a thing, and I don't know, it's just like little moments like that kind of, as you say, set the stage for things that are often attributed to geeky things nowadays. And obviously Nintendo, can't understate that.
Yeah.
How about you, Sean?
Not to like push a stereotype, but I was really picked on as a kid, like horribly so. And I didn't have a lot of self-confidence or self-esteem or anything like that. And so it was very easy to find escapism in geeky stuff because it was going into a world that seemed so much better than the world I was in. whether it was gummy bears or Ninja Turtles or, you know, whatever. There is, I mean, I can't talk about the origins of being a geek without acknowledging the fact that, like, being beat up and picked on as a kid really, really affected me becoming a geek. Maybe I wouldn't be a geek if I wasn't picked on as a kid, but I was, and so I am.
So it's funny how there's so many parallels with our backgrounds in a way, because, you know, I was an only child for the first 10 years of my life before my younger brother was born, and then 3 years later my youngest brother was born. So there's a 10 and 13 year difference between those siblings and their half brothers. I don't have any full blood siblings, so similar in some ways to the age gap or certain situations. Lived with my grandparents for, you know, a good amount of time and spent a lot of time there growing up. But my connection to the geek, I really blame on the rhetoric of the 80s. Because as a kid, I wasn't scrawny like the two of you said, but I was a little chubby kid, which isn't any better in a lot of ways. And a lot of the 80s properties, at least the ones that we kind of look back on somewhat fondly, are really about transformation. You know, Transformers, More Than Meets the Eye, Knowing Is Half the Battle with G.I. Joe, I Have the Power with He-Man. It's a lot of them are about transformation. So being a kid, being chubby, not being very popular or well-liked, there's always this desire of wanting to be something that I wasn't or being something more. And, you know, watching those things growing up kind of fed into a lot of that. The one thing that's different about mine is that, you know, up until the age about 8, you know, I was, you know, all in with cartoons and that world in the 80s and just bought into it. I went through a family change after that time when almost all that stuff was cut out, where I wasn't really allowed to be geeky at all or, you know, play in that world of fantasy. Everything was just realism and sports and, you know, for a number of years. So basically from the age of 8 till, let's say, 18, until I got to college and got into animation, and then I had to go into that world because the creativity and stuff demanded exposure to different things. So I had like this middle, you know, 8 to 18, just, you know, kind of denying the things that I did like, and then not until being an adult, being really, you know, being able to enjoy it and go back into it again. So it's kind of this weird wave and, you know, path for me of getting back to this point and really being able to enjoy it. And then the last 4 years, roughly, since I started making things and getting into YouTube and starting Geek Builders, of really embracing it. And then as a father, being able to pass it on. So now it's here to stay. I'm not letting go of it again. So I think we all have a personal connection with it, but yeah, it kind of cuts deep in some ways, you know, for our childhood and, you know, the impact that it had on us.
Yeah, definitely. You said, that's funny, you said that you had a gap there as well, because when I was 12, my grandmother that I live with, she passed away and I moved to very rural Virginia. And so, like, everything changed and, like, a lot of my toys and stuff, I couldn't bring a lot of them with me, or things happened, you know, out of a kid's control where, you know, you got to pick a couple things out of your room and that's it. You don't, you know, you think you can go back and get the rest of them, but something happened to them. I don't know whose decision it was, but
Same thing happened to me. It's so weird.
Yeah. I got like almost none of my like Transformers, almost none of my Ninja Turtles. I had so many Ninja Turtles and Transformers. I even had like, I think it was Predaking, which was like a 5-part Transformer set that like assembled together. And it wasn't even mine. It was my best friend's at the time it was like his most prized possession. Right. And I borrowed it and I was that kid that moved away and it disappeared.
Oh, no.
And I have no idea. Like, it was in my room, and at whatever that one night was that I didn't realize was the last night I was going to be in that room and all that stuff. Like, I'm sure my relatives grabbed a couple things for me, and yeah, I still feel bad about that. Like,
funny, because 2 weeks ago you were talking about your other friends being those friends that Seth would go over to their house and then you would never see it again.
I mean, you never know, right? Out of a kid's control. But yeah, like... So I can relate to that, like having, you know, have the new playthings that I needed to create were out of nothing. So like I would run out into the woods and into the creeks and streams, and I had a Boy Scout like background. So I would like lash tree forts together and structures and stuff in the woods. Like I was really good at knot tying, like ridiculously good. I've won like all kinds of merit badges and whatnot for it, and awards at like scout camps. So I could like actually do the proper knots to make structures you can climb up on and get like two-story kind of things in the woods, kind of like in the Hook movie, you know, like I think of like a Lost Boy, like building these crazy contraptions and stuff that are not to code, but they're super fun, like little creek running through, build like a little dam. And so that was my new place that was kind of the woods in a way. So, but I still kind of had that wanting to do more geeky stuff. Like I always had a Nintendo. That was one thing that my family always retained from my other household or my other home, you know. But but again, when I went into the military, a lot of that stuff I either gave it to cousins or sold it to other friends and stuff. So there was like a gap there where between 12 and 18 I lost a lot of the stuff just due to childhood events, right? And then from 18 to like 22 I intentionally and I chose to get rid of some of the stuff because I'm going to the military. What am I going to need all this stuff for? And of course, I regretted that.
Right.
Such an idiot. Right. So a lot of it is rebuilding, you know, collections.
We're all within, you know, a relative age, you know, within maybe 3 or 4 years of each other, I think. And I think that there was a certain push through the, you know, I'm going to assume it was, you know, similar for you guys. The late 90s of, you know, that stuff is kid stuff. You know, once you're an adult, you have to kind of let that go. I don't know if you've ever experienced that same thing. I remember that pressure a lot. And I bought into it, too, for like a number of years. Oh, that's kid stuff. You know, I'm trying to grow up as much as I can and get out on my own. And then it's amazing how much of it has come back and is now mainstream and normalized. Like, you know, it's... I mean, some people still kind of find it strange or, you know, might talk down at it, but it's such a part of regular culture now that it's, you know, not as much just kiddie. Maybe a little
bit.
Well,
I think just to specify gaming in particular, because you were talking about, because you said, you know, it's mainstream now. And I think it was a lot more prolific than we think it was when we were younger. It's just that nobody admitted to it or did it as much as we did, I think. Well, because come to find out, like, everybody was a gamer, but I was the only one that everybody called a gamer. Even though, like, the jocks had Super Nintendos and Sega Genesis, and, like, they... You know, they played as much on their video game systems as I did, but I was the geek.
I think video games are a weird exception, though, because it's something that isn't as readily visible. I mean, you might have the console, you might have something on a TV, but, you know, are they wearing T-shirts that have Mario on it? They have posters up in their room. They have toys. I think there's a lot of things that go into...
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think it's that one singular thing. Although I think it's a component, I don't think it's that alone. Right.
Do they subscribe to Nintendo Power and Electronic Gaming Monthly and GamePro? Watch Captain N and the Game Masters? Like, come on.
You have five copies of Lord of the Rings. Do you have a Matrix poster on your wall? Or, you know, most of the figures from the movie?
So it's the fandom.
Yeah.
But I mean, that is kind of a sense of it kind of like wearing it more outwardly instead of just, you know, being a fan of it, but, you know, I guess showing it maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember at a point in time that I never would have wore any kind of Marvel-related shirt out in public. I just wouldn't have done it.
Really?
Nope.
Interesting.
Absolutely not.
Man, I remember, I think I was, 10, and it was Halloween, and the Flash was really popular at that time. And I really wanted to be the Flash for Halloween. And so my mom and I got, what are they called? Thermals?
Yeah.
The really heavy pajama, like a one-piece thermal pajama. and we dyed it red, and we cut fabric and pieces to do the logo on the pajama, and we did all the accents and the helmet with the little wings and everything like that. And I went to, because I was really into bowling at the time, because it was something fun to do after school, and everybody smoked, and so it always smelled terrible. And I was always like, I'm going to get lung cancer because everybody's smoking, because it was before, you know, you couldn't smoke anywhere. But there was this huge Halloween party, and I was one of the only people that dressed up, and people picked on me like crazy. And I was like, why are you, this thing is awesome. What are you talking about? Like, this is so cool. Like, it's cosplay.
How old were you?
2018?
Yeah. Yeah. But no, it's so funny that it's like me cosplaying as a kid is not like what it is now. I think it's so cool that like cosplaying is popular now, because it's
dressing up like Halloween at other times other than Halloween.
Yeah. It's cool seeing an element of my childhood, which I was mocked and picked on relentlessly for. The kids nowadays are not, because it's cool. And so I am happy that my kids are growing up in a world where they will not be picked on for the things that I was picked on to the extent that I was, because it's cool now. It's cool now.
In all honesty, like starting around the age of maybe 12 or 13, I was more interested in trying to get the attention of the opposite sex. And I was willing to give up He-Man in order to get, you know, the girl down the road for me to notice me, which didn't happen anyways. But I mean, that's what I wanted. And I was willing to make that sacrifice.
Not for lack of trying, huh?
Right. That's a whole nother podcast topic. Maybe not. I don't know.
I have so many embarrassing stories. That would be a fun podcast. Or a terrible one. I don't know. I get that, though. I mean, that stage of life where everything kind of shifts and changes.
Yep.
I never really gave up the stuff from my childhood, although I didn't continue with it. Like, I still had, I still had all my toys and video games and all that kind of stuff as part of my decor in my room and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, stuff that was popular at the time. I guess I didn't cling to that as much as I did to stuff when I was a kid. Yeah, girls change things. It's just how it goes.
we get in the podcast right there.
Amen, brother.
Yep.
So what are you geeking out about? No.
It's funny going back and thinking, you know, of those early influences. It's probably my own selfishness and my own memories to, you know, when I say that I think the 80s were kind of a unique time for, you know, for a lot of those geeky things. There was a lot more, I think, kind of for the first time really being invested in kids programming, especially because of the some of the federal regulations, though, too, that each one had to kind of teach a lesson.
Right.
And I think the trade-off was, okay, well, we could teach them a lesson, but then we could also have the commercials that'll convince them to buy this stuff, too. And that did go on into the 90s, and then it kind of tapered off. And I think that that's kind of the end of it, because, you know, even though there's a lot of shows that kids watch right now, I don't think the influence is the same, because you don't have the whole package of the commercials, the toys, not in the same way that I think we experienced in the 80s and maybe early 90s.
Yeah, it's funny we bring up the cartoon kind of stuff on Saturday mornings, because I recently had a conversation with Samantha about that, like how cool it was to get up early, you know, before everybody else in the household, go downstairs, make yourself, you know, whatever sugariest cereal you can find, plop yourself in front of the television at just enough volume where you could like get into it but not wake anybody up. And just start pounding some Frosted Flakes or Lucky Charms. You know, you had just seen the commercial where they told you what the next, you know, design of the marshmallow is going to be. It was like the purple horseshoe or whatever. Like, oh my gosh, it's the purple horseshoe marshmallow rod. Tastes exactly the same, but it looks so cool. It was just like an experience. I remember thinking like to myself as a kid, like, how can life get any better than this? I'm never going to stop doing this. Like, why would I stop doing this? like having Saturday morning cartoons and eating, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I remember having that thought, like,
everything seemed great.
This is the pinnacle of human evolution, you know, of my life. It's all downhill from here. In some ways it was, but other ways not. Like,
you know, you could ask anybody and they'll be really nostalgic about their childhood and things they thought were great growing up. And I don't think this is any different. Just the sheer amount of marketing that we were subject to.
Oh, we were inundated.
And the amount of sugar that was being thrown at us on a daily basis and not having a care in the world. Yeah. And as an adult, I have to care, which kind of sucks.
My poor kids.
But she was just fascinated. Samantha was just like fascinated. Like, wait, there was a you could like have cartoons on all the channels and like choose what you want. Like, it's not like Netflix where they have everything in front of them and they get to choose. It was like it was chosen for you. It was weird. Like, having infinite choices. You think
lessons
that would be better?
The experience?
Yeah, somehow. I don't know. It's. I guess it's kind of like at Star Trek when they have food replicators. Food just doesn't taste as good anymore.
Well, it can have anything I also don't think that. I also don't think that a kid, say, under the age of 14, shouldn't have, you know, a ton of choices. That's more my philosophy, you know. Some choice, maybe, you know, the choice should be between channel 2, 4, 5, and 7, you know, not 80 different shows on Netflix.
Sure. Disney Plus, boom. I mean, that's just like...
I know.
It's also, I mean, it's also hard just because the type and quality of content has changed drastically. And I don't want to say it's looking through rose-colored glasses, but man, I feel like... The cartoons were just a little bit better back then. I'm not saying there's not good stuff now, because there's stuff out now that man, it blows anything that I grew up with out of the water. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, I just feel like...
Sorry, He-Man, you're not included in this conversation. That does not hold up. But the Disney Afternoon stuff, that animation is on point. Like, it's... Cinema quality, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Tailspin, Gummy Bears, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, Doug was another one.
Yep.
DuckTales, like
Darkwing Duck, Wuzzles. Wuzzles, man, come on, no one remembers the Wuzzles.
I do. I used to love that show.
Yep.
And it's like it's hard to find. Gargoyles. It's hard to find like shows that are objectively as good. I'm not saying they're bad. They're just
those are the early '90s though too.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
Bonkers. Yeah.
Bonkers.
Quack. Was it a Quack Pack?
Animaniacs.
The Mighty Ducks.
Oh, man. Yeah. Tiny Toons.
Tiny Toon Adventures. Yeah.
And what's funny is, like, a lot of those had such an impact on us that they're bringing them back.
Because they make money. We're the big.
They'll make money. We'll watch them, but then we'll also introduce them to our
new
kids.
New generation. Yeah. True.
A new generation.
Yeah. Sometimes it works great, like DuckTales. The reboot is amazing.
It is. If you give it a chance, it is.
What is it? The Cats. Thundercats. The
reboot
of the Thundercats is terrible.
Does that ever come out? The new one?
Yeah, where the animation style is like
the Thundercats
Adventure
Roar?
Time.
Yeah.
Or something. Oh, so bad.
Ugh.
Oh my gosh. Johnny Quest. Yes, Johnny Quest. Oh my gosh, so many things. Yeah, again, not trying to look through it through the rose-colored glasses, but I feel like it was kind of better.
I mean, even like in the cereals, like the things you can get in the cereal boxes were way better back then than you can get now. Like, I literally it shows what time period this was in, but I remember getting Cookie Crisp. Because they had like small phonograph records in the actual like thing, and it was like some sort of story about the dog and the criminal and the cop. What are those characters, the mascots for that cookie cereal that don't exist anymore? Like you'd play it, and it was like some sort of mystery. I have to look it up, but there's like a series of them that you could collect, and I had no interest in playing my grandmother's like record player. Like, I don't want to listen to Bing Crosby or something. Like, that's what she had, you know, like that kind of level stuff. It was, she typically played it most at Christmas time, but I digress. Like just the stuff that you could get out of a cereal box, like amazing prizes and stuff to get you to want to root in there. And they actually had it in the actual cereal itself, where now they have them like in outside the liner sometimes, or they kind
of take a picture of your receipt, send in for
or it's like printed on the inside of the cardboard box. It's just like cheap garbage.
Yeah, so you have all these laws and regulations of how you can and can't, you know, advertise to kids now.
Yeah.
And look what it's done to our economy. I mean, it's horrible.
It's just, yeah, it's in the toilet. Like, I swear, I think a lot of my reading prowess came from reading cereal boxes. Like, because I remember actively sitting at the dinner table.
Yep, you read the box.
And read every single side of the box. Like, riboflavin, dude, I could, like, spat out some vitamins and minerals, some additives. Like, I would like pronounce them. I just remember pronouncing them out loud. Like, every single panel, I would just read all the time. Like, because we didn't have the internet. Like, I remember, like, my grandmother, I'm sure I told the story before, but she had like a 1967 World Book Encyclopedia that had mostly black and white pictures in the, you know, complete collection, except for a couple tomes or a couple issues. They had like, that's how they kind of were back then. And it was awesome. I would just like sit, I remember sitting there and just like flipping through looking for color pages because they were so rare. And like the S volume, for some reason, because of identifying snakes, they wanted to put color pages there. I like vividly remember the snake area because you had to identify them of what the different species were and other things. But I remember having, this is sort of a tangent, but I remember getting a book report or some sort of report for a school and me failing this one assignment because my source material lacked the moon landing that I was like referencing. And so like I had like not in bad information, it was just like not complete information, and I didn't really realize at the time, and it sort of screwed me up a little bit, but which is hilarious. But
did you guys have Book It?
We all do. Book It. That's the only reason. Yeah, that
and the personal pan pizza for Pizza Hut.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I've got a Ninja Turtles.
Nationwide.
I've got the Ninja Turtles 2 arcade game for NES, like box and the instruction manual. And on the back page, there's a clip out for a free personal pan pizza at Pizza Hut. Because actually, in the game, there's like Pizza Hut signs in the game. And that was like the first instance I think that I can remember of like in game advertising. But yeah, Book It, man. Oh, so good.
I still, to this day, I still have all my buttons with the stars on them.
They made us trade the buttons in.
You know what?
They made us trade the buttons in for the pizza.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I got like a coupon or something when I showed the button to the star. Right. Yeah, I still have all my Book It, the big old buttons with the stars. You wear it. The thing was ginormous. I mean, it wasn't.
I think I had a piece of paper with a picture of the button.
Right.
It's like a certificate. I read so many books because of that. Because of that program. Not that I didn't read books, because I love books. Like, I've always liked books. When my wife and I got married, I packed up all of my possessions into 15 boxes, into 15 moving boxes. 12 of those 15 boxes were books. My wife was so mad. So mad. She's like, we are not moving all these books again. So I like books, but yeah, Book It. Do they still do Book It now?
I think there's some sort of variant of it, isn't there?
It's something called AR.
That's not very catchy, is it?
No, it's not. It's not sponsored the same way, but it's kind of there's a national ranking for books based on complexity of theme and number of words and all this other stuff. And they have to read a certain number of words per year. It doesn't have the fancy marketing behind it.
So I just looked it up. It does exist still. They have a similar logo.
I'm still affiliated with
Book Open and the stars going everywhere. I loved Book It. Oh, man. And the Scholastic newsletter that would go out was like gold. Oh, my gosh. Because you got to see all the cool books. It's like, I want that one. Oh, this is going to be so cool. And
I remember everybody just wanted the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah.
That was like the popular one.
You're right. I would always get my buddy and I, the same friend who I inadvertently stole his favorite Transformer from, he would always get the Garfield books, like the compilation, like they were like really long, like yeah. form factor, and he would just have all of them. And I remember going to his house. He's actually got to introduce me to Weird Al too, and Nintendo. Like he had the Nintendo first. That's the first time I ever played Mario Brothers, and I got stuck between the first couple pipes in World 1-1. Like I remember that distinctively. Like,
and to thank him, you stole his Transformer.
I know. And apparently the Karate Kid NES game I did. He told me later on that that was another one that I had borrowed, which I ended up getting that back for him like a couple years ago and sent it to him. That was kind of fun. But yeah, it was just so many like formulative moments. Good times.
So do you guys support your kids in being geeks?
Absolutely. All right, I mean, look good. At Grant's room.
You will be a geek.
No, I mean, if my kids turn out not to be geeks, I'm okay with that, but...
I'm trying to teach Samantha it's important to embrace the weird. Like, yeah. It's kind of like, you know, something that still is a little bit lost in, like, wanting to conform to other things. Like, don't be afraid to do things differently, you know?
Yeah.
Or enjoy things, even if everyone else doesn't.
I'm trying to teach my kids a little bit more of not in comparison, but trying to teach them a balance between... things is because there is so much to consume right now. There is so much to geek out about that I'm really trying to kind of enforce getting away from just completely being surrounded by it all the time. Just because there's so many options now and you could, you know, 24/7 just surround yourself with, you know, that stuff. And, you know, my wife and I have a general rule where, you know, that's okay to consume. You can watch these TVs, you can play some of these games, but you have to also create, you have to do something creative in the process to make something, use your own brain to kind of create your own, you know, world, I guess, or, you know, wherever you want to, you know, put it, whether it's coding or, you know, animating. My son's been animating a lot in Scratch right now, and that's how he's kind of creating his own things. So just trying to enforce that a little bit more with them. Donovan, you know that you're in Pitch Black, right?
I am.
Yeah, we can't see you.
Uh-oh.
That's okay. While we transition.
It's a good thing it's an audio podcast.
Yep. What are you guys geeking out about this week?
Here, not let me show you.
Geeking out for the last hour. Well,
yeah, we have been geeking out. That's okay, though. Okay, so my wife's 40th birthday was yesterday. I had a lot of friends that recorded video messages for her. You guys did a great one, Sean. Thank you.
Thank you.
I stitched all of them together into like a big collection
montage.
That she could watch. A montage, yeah, thank you. And at the very end, it was like me and the kids, we like did happy birthday, Samantha played piano, you know, kind of thing. And then I put like happy birthday in text and then had it like staticky and like it was fading out and like glitching. And then after like 10 seconds, Dulé Hill from the TV show Psych, he had a message that I had secretly purchased, I guess. Like there's a service called Cameo, which you might have seen ads for on Facebook, which before this I completely scoffed at. And they had like celebrities on there that were sort of like D-list celebrities. I'm like, oh man, this must be like bottom of the barrel kind of stuff. Like, look at these guys like pandering. This is super lame. Why would anybody get this? And then, like, literally the next week, like, Dulé Hill from Psych was on there and had, like, a little advertisement thing. I'm like, oh, man, I'm going to totally get this. What a idiot I have been. Like, this treasure trove. And so, basically, a lot of the individual, like, celebrities or whatever, they have, like, reviews. And they have, like, sample videos that they've done for other people. And I got him to record a happy birthday video for Catherine, and it was like over 5 minutes long, and it was really good. Like it was hilarious. He did all kinds of quips and quotes and mentioning things from the show.
One shot too.
One continuous shot.
Yeah.
Amazing. And her face was perfect. Like she was just like, how did you, what? And she was just, it was great. It was completely worth it. And I would highly recommend that service, at least from him personally. If you're into Psych, the TV show, which is one of our favorites, we quote it all the time.
What did
to
he keep calling you?
He kept calling her Boneless Boondoggle. So, like, a thing in the show whenever they would introduce one of the characters to another like person, they would always like introduce themselves and then secondary character someone else. Like it, the name would constantly change. It was like a running gag. And so he made up like funny names for Catherine and myself as well. He called me like Silly Pants Jackson or something like that, which is a quote from the show. But it was awesome. It was really good. And so I was geeking out about that for over the last month. I like barely shared with anybody and I could barely contain it because I knew she would love it. And so that's what I'm geeking out about, is kind of celebrating her birthday. So
that was fun to watch. Geeking out about two things. One, Nick over at Run CNC. If you guys don't know, look him up on Instagram. He makes these custom clips for the Maker knife. And mine that comes with the knife snapped off. Because it's my one complaint about this knife is that the clip was terrible. And it caught on like a door or something as I was walking by it and just completely snapped off. And so I've been without a clip. So somebody recommended that I get in touch with him, and he made this new handle for me with my logo engraved on his CNC on this brass. Is this brass? Brass new handle for my new Maker knife. And it looks so cool. And so I've been playing and it gives it weight. There's like more heft to it now. And it feels fun. Like it's like a fidget spinner for makers, is this little Maker knife. So I've been geeking out about that. And kind of going back to what I was geeking out about last week, I bought a new mini cinema lens, a prime lens, 35 millimeter for my camera, which I am so excited to start using because there's a lot of things that I want to do with my movie theater that I'm building. And I think this lens will help get the kind of shots and dynamics that I'm really going for that one. So I'm geeking out about a lens and a knife, you know, very geeky stuff.
It's appropriate.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm geeking out about nothing. I got nothing this week. I couldn't come up with anything. Maybe I'll just do a two next week then. The one thing I'm geeking out about is episode 200 coming up. Just as a reminder for everybody, on October 25th, mark your calendars. We'll be streaming it on YouTube. Be there. It'll be fun. Giveaways, guests. It'll be a good time. And you can also find out more about all of that stuff. You go to our website, makingyous.com. You can find information on episode 200 there. And you can also listen to all of our past podcasts there on the site. And the contact page, you can send in any notices, or not notices, what am I talking about? messages.
Fill out your CPS reports and all that stuff.
Yeah, I know. you know, any questions you have for the show or suggestions for topics, we love hearing those. And go ahead and keep those coming right there on MickeyGeeks.com.
And if you want to check our stuff out individually, you can find us on your social media platform of choice, as long as it's Instagram or TikTok in my case. So if you want to see what Sean is doing, he is found over at Geek Builders. Wes is found at Geeksmithing. I am found at Once Upon a Workbench. So come see what we're working on. And yeah.
And we'd like to thank our patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for helping us keep the show on the air with their financial contributions each and every time we post a podcast recording. We'd like to thank our top patrons as well with a shout out: Square Splinter, Jordan Rimple, and Clinton from C3D Prop Shop. Thank you guys so much for your support. We appreciate you very much.
And we'd like to say thank you to everybody in the live chat for hanging out with us. It's always a good time kind of bantering back and forth as the show kind of goes on. And you can find new episodes of the show every Saturday on your favorite podcast player of choice. So from all of us to all of you, have a fantastic week.
See you next time.
See you later.
Take care.
Two episodes left.
And He-Man's like Papa Smurf, corrupted by his own power.